Connect with others in the Awaken Therapist community and join us over on Patreon. When you become a member of the Awaken Therapist community, you'll gain access to exclusive teachings, consultations, and resources. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. I'm Harmony Quiker, licensed counselor, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, where I teach Gestalt therapy. I created this podcast to support therapists and clients in unlocking the magic of psychotherapy. In season two, I'm joined by expert therapists who bring a wealth of insight into the conversation of transpersonal counseling. The growing interest in psychedelic-assisted therapy is deeply intertwined with the growing interest in transpersonal counseling. To learn more about this paradigm shift, I'm joined by lead educator and facilitator Tal Shaarabi. Tal brings a wealth of wisdom to the practice of psychedelic-assisted therapy, and she offers us in-depth cases that illuminate the practical use of psychedelics when working with clients who've experienced complex trauma. I hope you enjoy this episode. As I was getting ready to come and meet with you, I just kept pondering, like, where do we even begin when talking about psychedelics? And the place that I keep arriving in within myself is that we really are in this paradigm shift of moving from thinking of psychedelics as a drug to really honoring psychedelics as a sacred medicine. Yeah, I'd love to just hear your thoughts and what you're seeing and experiencing with psychedelics.
We're seeing the paradigm shift and also seeing how psychedelics are coming to conscious mainstream awareness in all shapes and forms. So that can look like so many different things. And because of that, that's the nature of creation, right? It takes shapes in so many different ways. It means that we're asked to also to be mindful and careful about how we want to engage and what we want to bring forward. The field is trying to understand itself because it's coming to the conscious awareness of the West after being stewarded for so many millennia with indigenous peoples and by the earth. This is the second wave, I can say, around psychedelics coming to our conscious awareness, which the first one happened around the 60s and 70s, started as early as the 20s and 40s, 1940s. This time around, it looks like with the legalization and the regulation, we're trying to do something different. We're trying to bring it in a certain way. And there are questions around gatekeeping. There are questions about what is the right way, who gets to make the call. So, being an educator, I hold those questions somewhere in the back of my mind all the time and somewhere in the front of my mind weekly when I engage with teaching.
As I'm listening to you, it sounds like the second wave is really has an intention behind it that we haven't really seen in the West before.
Yes, the second wave started with research. Research started to come up to the surface. It started with the DMT research with Rick Strassman and continued to Rick Doblin's work around MDMA and legalization. There are other pioneers like that started to bring it to public awareness. That at the same time, ceremonies, plant medicine ceremonies, started to become more and more aware. People started to do ayahuasca and mushrooms. They traveled to Central and South America to be exposed to those medicines. So I think that is maybe a collective emergence of psychedelics into awareness, starting by the late 1990s. And now we're seeing an interesting movement where there was the attempt by MAPS to legalize MDMA, and that was a hard work, very hard work of many, many years that showed to the world how MDMA can assist in healing of trauma, PTSD. And at the same time, there's a On the other hand, a movement to legalize psilocybin and get that recognized as a medicine. And both of those actually got an acknowledgement from the FDA of being a breakthrough treatments. But what Oregon did in Colorado is doing right now is maybe unprecedented and quite special, because this is a state level regulation that we passed to regulate and legalize the use of plant medicine for, it's not designated necessarily for healing, but the fact is that 60% to 70% of the people that come to seek psilocybin services come from mental health issues. So we're seeing how we are adopting this paradigm shift for mental health, and it's taking place for a long time now, right? For about 20 years, it's taking shape and place, and now we get to do it in Oregon and Colorado.
Psychedelics is a broad term that encompasses both plant medicine and pharmaceutical grade psychedelics. How would you sort of explain psychedelics to people who are listening who might not be familiar?
The classic psychedelics are DMT, psilocybin, mescaline, and I'm missing one. And all of them can create psychedelic effects, which means that those famous perceptory changes, the changes in the vision, the changes in the perception of space-time, all of that. But we're talking in Oregon and in Colorado right now, the only medicine that is, can be practiced is psilocybin, and it's not a synthetic form, natural form. So psilocybin and all of those natural medicines can be synthesized in a lab, but actually the regulation is only for the natural form.
I didn't know that. Interesting. I have heard, just stories over here in Colorado about Oregon's sort of regulation of for providers of what's needed to even hold the medicine. And, here it's decriminalized to grow and to offer for personal use. And I think Oregon is much more regulated.
So in Oregon, the medicine is grown by professionals, professional mycologists, that they test the mushroom to see the content of the psilocin and psilocybin, and they have to have a label on, and each kind, they have different varieties, and each kind have its own numbers and its own content. And these numbers are well known for the facilitators and providers. And those people deliver the mushrooms to the service centers. We call it service centers. In Colorado, it's healing centers. And they stored in a locked room. And that's where the regulation happens. I bet they have different kinds of ways of taking number of how many they distribute. And if any content of that is not being used by the client, it needs to be discarded in a safe way, so nobody can take home any psilocybin after their journey.
Interesting. And I was reading some research, I think it was actually just yesterday, but like researching plant medicine and as having its own inherent intelligence and just as opposed to something that was created in a lab. And I'm just wondering if you see a benefit to either the lab produced medicine like MDMA versus plant medicine.
I want to sit with that for a moment. I feel like I'm going to answer anecdotally from my experience. I work with ketamine. I am trained to work with MDMA, and I have partaken myself, and have practiced with natural medicines, psilocybin, and also ayahuasca and mescaline. I've had experiences like that in. Especially when traveling in Mexico and Central America. So, feeling into that question and witnessing how some of my clients went through MDMA journeys for PTSD and developmental trauma, which is my area of work, and seeing the transformation and how the medicine helps the client with their own pace and their own rhythm to uncover and go into those moments of pain and help them to bring attention and awareness and love and kindness into that. So that kind of process and also witnessing my clients with ketamine, how it works completely differently, but still there is something that still brings some wisdom forward, maybe a process of grief, maybe some kind of awareness. So watching those synthetic compounds still acting in a way that is compassionate humanity and helping to heal trauma makes me feel like there's still value. There's still value. And when we talk about the inner healer, the inner healing intelligence, as you know, it's something that we emphasize in psychedelic work as the innate ability of each human being to have their inner guidance for healing. And that is what we believe is being met with the medicine and how it works. It's still quite potent. I do agree, though, that plants, I do feel that in myself and the way that mushroom works, the way ayahuasca works, the way that mescaline works, that they have their own wisdom in some way, that it's beyond me to explain how and what, but anecdotally, I felt it every time I use it.
Thank you for that. I hear a lot of therapists who are trained in psychedelic-assisted therapy talking about integration. But I've had a student ask me recently, and I'm not trained as a psychedelic-assisted therapist, but do you ever actually do other therapeutic interventions while a person has medicine? Or what does a psychedelic-assisted therapy session even look like?
This is such an interesting question because there is a context to it. The context is that in Oregon, you're not allowed yet to have dual licensure. So when you're a therapist, you need to take off your therapy hat, put on your facilitator hat, and you're not allowed to actually use your skills, which is a question of, can I really separate myself from my skills? But you're not allowed to use psychotherapy interventions directly in facilitation. Yeah, so that's interesting. That's in Oregon. In Colorado, you're allowed to do that. And I think the field is coming up with more and more ways in which those two can work together. One famous way of those interventions to be discovered was the story of the Meathoffers, Annie and Michael. They're a couple that worked with in the research of MDMA for PTSD protocol. And Annie is trained in Hukomi and Michael is trained in IFS. And both of them notice how naturally those modalities work well with in the session. I'm talking about administration session with their clients. So I think there is room for that. But I want to back away a little bit more and also talk about how does it look like, because not every medicine is the same. So I think that different medicines will need and require a different set of work and intervention. MDMA is empathogenic, so it's relational. There is more room for this kind of work. Also, ketamine on low doses can be also relational and opening, and that's where there is a more access to work in this kind of exploration. Psilocybin works a little bit differently, and because the psilocybin comes with some wisdom, and there is this whole psyche journey and experience that happens that is beyond what we see as facilitators, how to work with it, how to engage with it looks a little bit different. And there are some modalities that work really well with that. And I think as really skilled therapists are getting in touch with those medicines, we're starting to see their learning and unlearning that happens. I like to say to my students that this is an experience. Psychedelic is an experience. So if I can say a word to therapists out there that are thinking, how can I use my skills in the session? There's a lot of unlearning to do. Modalities that work are the modalities that are evocative, that they're experiential, that use maybe less words, don't go to the mind, and they can meet the client where they are as the experience unfolds. I work with sensorimotor psychotherapy and also with transpersonal lens and sometimes parts work, but my intervention with ketamine and psilocybin will look differently. Sometimes we need to actually join the client in their experience and just see how we can witness and support what is unfolding in a way that helps the client to not be maybe too much over the window of tolerance, but right in the wave in the edge where the transformation happened, you know, and help the clients identify when they need that support.
What stands out to me is witness and support with few words. And that really relates to how we approach Gestalt therapy, witnessing a client in their present moment expression, meeting them as they are without trying to change them or insert our ideas into their experience, really make room for them to reconnect with their innate wisdom and find their way through their experience, but with our support.
These kind of modalities, they're really helpful for the clients to be met. They're relational, right? We're relational. So there is a deep attunement. We're holding the space for whatever the client wants to express lovingly and letting it unfold. And sometimes we help the experience deepen with just a comment or a look or a certain way we hold our bodies. Yeah, breath. So that is what's needed in the space.
Thank you for explaining that. It's helpful for me to sort of conceptualize just even the space holding that you're offering as a client in their experience. Sometimes I hear therapists wonder about the effectiveness of psychedelics in working with a client who has a personality disorder. And I know clinically, I've had clients who've experienced ketamine therapy from somebody else, and they've come to me, and I can see the differentiation from their personality in this very deep way. So, just anecdotally, I can see the benefit, but I'm wondering if you have any insight into that.
It's such an interesting question. It actually shows that people, for example, with narcissistic personality disorders, psychedelics can make it worse. So that's maybe a contraindication sometimes.
Meaning that a person would become more hyper-identified with their narcissistic traits.
It could.
They
It's a
could.
risk.
Interesting. Are there any other contraindications?
Of course, if psychosis is something that we want to be careful of, and there are some people that are starting to work with people with schizophrenia or bipolar and also personality disorder like BPD, but these are very skilled people that are being very careful, and mostly it's done right now in the context of research and just at the infancy of research, as far as I know. For the everyday psychedelic therapist, I wouldn't recommend to dive into that because we don't know enough about the response. My favorite quote by Ram Dass, one of my favorites, is "You have to be somebody before you become nobody." And Ram Dass says that in an answer to a question if youth can do psychedelics. That was asked in the 60s, 70s, something like that. And I like that answer because what we're looking at is does the person have enough ego structure and ego strength to be able to go into that fragmentation that happens? Because there is a fragmentation, there is an expansion that happens with psychedelics, and you never know if the pieces will come back together the way they need to. Even scientifically, when we look at the structures that we call the default mode network in the brain, and that these are structures that been seen as where we hold the personality, right? These are structures that ingrain, they are pathways that we created so heavy, so much that they are just become their own definition. What we're doing psychedelics is opening them up and allowing new connections to happen and allowing for more flexibility. But the structure is still there. Most people will come back to somewhat who they are with a new understanding, new awareness. But a person that doesn't have that sense of self and doesn't have that identity, doesn't have that structure, even emotionally, they will have a hard time to come back to that. So for most psychotherapists out there, I would say maybe not, maybe use caution. The risk with bipolar one, for example, is hypomania or mania that can be triggered from that. Right now I'm talking about psilocybin. Ketamine is different. Ketamine can be used carefully, but it can be used with psychiatric medicines. They can be used with a bipolar one. With personality disorder, for example, attachment-based personality disorder, I would say that we need to do a lot of preparation before. Again, to see how the person is holding, how's their relationship holding, and to be able to go slowly into the place where things are unpredictable and can be opened up. How can we create enough container, enough structure that it will be beneficial for the client and healing?
Thank you. So beautiful. We have to become somebody before we become nobody. It's such a beautiful way of explaining that. Thank you. I would just love to hear a little bit more what you offer as a trainer, and I believe at InnerTrek.
I work at InnerTrek both as a trainer in the school. InnerTrek is a training for facilitators. We work in Oregon. We're in our fourth cohort in Oregon and about to start the fifth in October. And we just started the first cohort in Colorado as well. I've been in the program from the beginning, so I feel very, very lucky to be able to feel into the field and feel into what do we need to teach, not just in the way of how can people hold space, not just as the law asks it, but to provide best practices. And also, I know that me and my colleagues that created the curriculum together, we have in mind how we want people to carry the medicine in the field. So that's why I'm still with InnerTrek and do that. I also facilitate in the InnerTrek Service Center here in Oregon. I hold practicums, open practicums, and I do individual work with clients with psilocybin.
Beautiful. Thank you. Join us in the Awaken Therapist online classroom, where my guest offers a master class in their area of expertise. This is intended for educational purposes only, and the content here should not be taken as advice or clinical supervision. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. The Awaken Therapist Level 1 certification is starting September 2025. In the 6-month training, you'll learn how to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Join us in exploring deeper dimensions in your work with clients with less burnout. To learn more, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com.